With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hello and welcome, and yes, you are listening to Is It Just Me? The podcast that's not afraid to tackle the smallest worries, annoyances, niggles we all have and spend way too much time examining. Examining them in full. I'm Joe Elvin.
And I'm James Williams.
And each week we're inviting a celebrity guest to pick three issues and ask, is it just me? And our guest this episode is the absolutely incomparable Annie Mac, globally renowned DJ, probably the coolest DJ in the world.
Yeah,
I think that's right.
Let's go with that.
I'll take it.
Yeah, official new music ambassador for Radio 1, launched the careers of, and I've checked my facts on this, literally millions of new acts.
Yes, go with it, Annie.
Once again,
go with
I'll take it.
Yeah.
For the sake of the podcast.
Who needs Wikipedia when you've got this kind of bio?
And when you sort of like don't work for a big company anymore.
Make it up.
Your own facts. Yeah.
Well, that's what Wikipedia is, right?
Hi, it's Annie Mac.
Hi, guys. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for having us. We're in your
Well, you are in my kitchen. Yeah.
This is so nice. And a very good cup of tea. Annie Mac makes great tea, people.
Oh, thank goodness for that.
Yeah, no, it's good. I used to be a Barry's tea virgin.
Yeah.
And now... you know, it's changed me, I've got to say.
Forget Barry's boot camp, it's about Barry's tea.
Yeah, it's definitely my preferable Barry of the two.
Makes you sweat less.
If any of you are in Ireland anytime soon, can you please pick me up?
Yes.
A big red box of Barry's tea bags for Joe, please.
Yeah. Yes, please. I mean, you know, and that's a compliment from an Australian. We're just as picky about our tea.
Yeah.
Yeah. How are you, Annie Mac?
I'm great.
You must be knackered.
No, I'm actually, I got back from Ireland late last night and I got a really long sleep. With just the one wake up, so I feel like a new person today.
Spoken like a true mother. Like, just the one wake up, like, I mean luxury.
Yeah. I feel like a butterfly just come out of her pupa, you know, like, I'm back.
And you look like you've just come out of pupa as well. I mean that as a huge compliment.
Thank you.
Fresh-faced.
Yeah.
Fresh off the High Five tour.
Fresh off the High Five tour, which was, okay, so let me just explain the concept because you need to know what the High Five tour is. It's basically five venues, £5 a ticket, and they're all really small. So it's like small, sweaty venues. And it was great. However, there was one like consistent problem for me, and I'm going to sound like a grumpy person now, phones.
Oh.
Phones. Because...
James, is your phone switched off?
Yeah, I'm on silent.
No, listen, I am the biggest phone addict of all. I'm on my phone all day. But phones, from a DJ perspective, when you're in a tiny, tiny room with ravers like right up where they can touch you, which is great. I love that aspect of it.
Jesus.
But everyone just has their phones in your face the whole time.
Well, they're literally filming
in
you doing
your
DJ.
Face. So they're filming you with their flash on, like right in your face. I can handle that. It's kind of annoying after a while, but it's fine. Then they write things on their phone and give you their phone. So it's like, hey, can I touch your hair? But phone in your face, not moving their phone for 20 minutes, just standing there like that. And you're like, also things like, can I come backstage, blah, blah, blah. It's my birthday, great, here's some champagne. No, can I come backstage? No, it's really boring back. So you end up like having these conversations with people. And then the absolute worst is people giving you their phone and asking you to take a selfie with their phone and then give it back to them. And it's like, guys, can I DJ?
Yeah, exactly.
I'm here, don't you want to listen to the music?
Somebody needs to write the new Debrett's etiquette guide or some such, because it is a
whole new level
world of crap, isn't it?
And even it's been probably about a year and a half since I've done that type of tour because I had a baby. So in that time, even, it's got kind of really intensely worse, just in terms of what people are willing to do, to stand there with your phone in someone's face for like half an hour. You paid money, £5 albeit, but money still, to be in this room. So enjoy yourself.
It's interesting though, isn't it? Because I think, you know, you've heard about, lots of stage actors have talked about, you know, how phones are really ruining the theatre experience.
Yeah.
And, you know, there was a really fascinating article on some website a few months ago about a waiter that wrote how phones have actually impacted his waiter in a Manhattan restaurant. And it was fascinating, his breakdown of how phones have actually impeded the length of times they have sittings for, because literally people are all Instagramming their food.
Yeah.
You know, they're all Googling
stuff. And also
they're
happy to wait longer because they have their phone.
So it's interesting how it just has this knock-on effect. But I've never heard the thought of the DJ thing. But you're right, it's just the fact that people have got the patience.
Well, a lot of the clubs, like the really kind of the good underground clubs, there's a club called Berghain in Berlin, which is really famous. That has a no-phone policy. So that's either of I've just heard about it.
Yeah.
But there's a sticker on it. You have to put stickers on your phone. So they let you have your phone. I mean, it's a bit kind of mad to take your phone, to pay people's phones off them. But there should be a no camera, no phone. Like, just like, because clubs are the last chance we have just to be in the moment and connect with people on a human level. So just...
But I guess we're a different generation. My feeling about things, I always think, oh gosh, I was having too much fun to get my phone out. You know, I forget to take pictures of things, and I'm really bad. I rely on my friends to take pictures a lot of the time. But, you know, so I'm the very opposite. But I guess you're talking about a generation now who literally do.
Well, fun is fun.
Yeah, you're right.
The only way you can have fun is if you put it on Instagram so everyone sees it. Then
if it's not on Instagram, it didn't happen.
Do you know what I mean? I mean, we could do a whole series of podcasts on phones.
Well, totally. You know, Jay, I do find that, especially as I'm not sort of like working full time at the moment, I do slightly have that feeling. I'll be honest, it's like, if I'm not on Instagram, do I exist?
Yeah.
You know, it's like, I don't want anyone to think I've been doing nothing except sitting in a bucket of Mars bars all day.
I know.
Maybe I did do that, but you know.
I don't want anyone thinking I've had a nasty fall downstairs. I'm lying at the bottom of them and no one's come to check on me. I feel like that's how I'm using Instagram, like a panic alarm now. Just reassuring people, don't worry, I'm still alive.
Still alive.
Yeah, it's still alive, still going.
And you've got the album out.
Got the album out. So last week we decided to launch like 6 things in 1 week. It all kind of converged.
Yeah.
So we launched the album on Wednesday last. We launched this a new thing that we're doing called AMP Sounds, which is a series of events in Camden over a month of February next year, all different parties and raves. And I launched on my radio show, I launched like the hottest record of the year. We're doing that, so there's just so much going on.
Not very busy then.
No.
How do you keep going? How do you, I mean, you clearly love it. I think you've become so respected and so globally renowned as we all know, because it clearly sort of like oozes forth from you, that passion for music and DJing and everything that you do. What keeps you excited?
I just love working. I love learning. I love being creative. I love the things I like the most is just like starting, having an idea and being able to run with it and execute it. I find really exciting. The BBC, I love. I mean, doing the radio job every night is just my dream job, and it's a kind of lovely job where you feel like you will hopefully be doing it when you're 70, you know, because it's I don't know, it's just solid and secure and lovely. But everything else I do because I think I might like being busy.
Yeah.
In fact, I'd know I do. And if I'm not busy, I get a little panicky. So I moan about it, but I like having a lot of things to do.
Yeah.
Within reason. So I like that, and I just like being able to kind of have ideas and execute them. When you work at the BBC, there's so many departments and people, and it's hard to get things off the ground. So the way I work outside the BBC is completely opposite of that. I have me and the two girls who run AMP with me, which are Sarah and Lucy, and we do everything together, from book a festival lineup to create a new festival to just have ideas and run with them. And I like that. I like being able to do that and be across every aspect of things, from the artwork to, I don't know, the sound bed on a Spotify ad, like everything. We're across all the little bits, and I like that.
Do you think, you're sort of talking about, you know, doing this when you're 70, which I can totally see, sort of 100 years into the future that is, clearly.
105, I think, Joe.
Yeah, sorry.
You're in negative numbers right now, aren't you?
I'm just really offended anyway. She looks 18.
Exactly.
Would you ever, you know, launch your own radio station?
I've really thought about that.
Yeah.
I love the idea of launching a radio station, because that's kind of the culmination of everything I know.
Yeah.
But I'm too happy where I am. and the BBC, I think. If something horrible happened and I got turfed out, then maybe that would be something that I'd really like to endeavour. But for now, I'm happy there.
What's the best thing about working at the BBC? Because I think particularly, you know, Radio 1 over the years has also had a lot of flack about being ageist. It's not though, is it? It's...
No, I mean, I shouldn't technically be there if it was ages, because I'm near on 40, and it's there for 25.
Maybe they didn't know that.
25 to 40. They do know.
There's the exclusive.
Yeah. But no, I mean, you know, Annie Nightingale is well older. You know, Pete Tong, Scott Mills. There's a lot of people in there who are considerably older than me, and I'm happy about that.
And they'll thank you for reminding me.
Yeah.
If she's going, she's taking them all with her.
I think specialist music is definitely nice to gracefully grow old in, because people don't care what age you are in specialist, and we're lucky to have John Peel in our lives.
I was going to say
who kind of set a precedent for
because people expect you to know your stuff, and experience is actually an advantage when it comes to that, isn't it? It's not just somebody filling an hour of radio playing popular hits. It's somebody who really knows their genre,
I think as well, I think it's about kind of, you know, being young spirited. It's about liking new things. It's about being excited by new things rather than grumpy, if you know what I mean.
I agree, and I really think it's important that, you know, particularly women in their 40s remain visible. I've talked about it many times, but like the time that somebody congratulated me for being brave for mentioning my age on Facebook, and it's like, but you kind of got to stand up and say, I'm not disappearing just because I'm over 40.
And I'm okay with being over 40 as well.
Well, most of the time.
Some mornings.
There's a couple of strange additions to the body.
Okay. I'm not there yet, but I'm going to brace myself.
So the big 4-0 is
next year.
Next year, you got plans?
Wow, that's going to be one hell of a party, surely.
Well, I'm going to get married just before.
Wow.
So for some reason, I decided I want to get married before I was 40. I don't know, maybe that's just my excuse to get married.
And who are you getting married to?
I'm getting married to my partner. I'll be with him 10 years next year, actually, as well, which is, I didn't even realise.
Well, it's actually a beautiful kind of like bookend happening here.
And we have two kids, you know, we've kind of, I feel like, I just never was interested in getting married before, but for some reason, I think it was the arrival of my second kid made us both a bit mushy, and we just decided that maybe we should.
But also, why organise two parties when you can just organise one?
Well, I'm going to have two parties for the wedding, and one of them's going to be massive.
Yeah.
And then for the 40th, what I'll do is just have a really long, boozy dinner with a load of friends.
Nice. Yeah. That's what I did for my 40th.
And maybe get a nice hotel room and stay out and come back next day at lunchtime and have a lie-in.
Babysitters. Babysitter and give you that ultimate gift for you.
I hired a private room and had about 20 people, and it honestly was such a nice
lovely
party. First of all, I invited the world to this big party.
Yeah.
And then I did the maths on the big party.
Yeah.
So then I had to do the embarrassing thing of emailing everyone going, shit, I didn't realise this was going to cost me about 15 grand. So actually...
Yeah, you're used to having like sponsors of things. If it's your own private thing, you're like... He actually said the other day, he's like, do you reckon we could get a sponsor for a wedding party? We're not Kim and Kanye. Yeah. I don't want a booze sponsor for my wedding. And he's like, all it will be is an Instagram. I'm like,
You might not be old enough, you guys, to remember when Anthea Turner married Grant Bovey and they got Flake to sponsor it with Hello, and they got so much flack. They were in some of their wedding pictures
holding
chomping
Flake.
On Flake.
Oh my God.
And everybody...
It was a white chocolate Flake. I think it was a limited edition Flake, if I remember.
And
it
never lasted, did it?
You know, well, it did last for a while, and I just think, you know, now that I'm like, parties are expensive, if Flake could come calling, maybe I would have considered.
But come on.
But also, I think in this day and age, people are way more open to that and not disgusted by it. Like, especially in Britain, I think, you know,
it's taken
a lot longer when you look at America for Britain to kind of embrace commercial
Simon
game
Cowell
like
thanked
that.
Just Eat at the X Factor final on live TV. He actually said, I want to say thank you to Just Eat. He actually thanked the sponsors
before he thanked
everybody.
For every night.
So if Simon Cowell was having to acknowledge, you have literally acknowledged
that
to have
is
this
mad.
Feeling. You come on, you know, that is, I think you're right. There's no shame, I think, anymore in admitting, you know, and I guess this is what's good about what's happening on social media, where people are being much more honest about, yes, this has been paid for, you know.
I think when it's not been paid for, it's more of a surprise.
But also, the public aren't stupid. Public can see through it, you know, and often they'll ask even when it's not, you know. So anyway,
That's that issue sorted.
Yes.
So anyway, I don't know where we started and where we where we finished there, but mobile phones, they're all right. You know?
Yeah, they're great for many reasons.
Yeah.
It's not just us.
Yes, but
because
don't...
you can download the Annie Mac compilation.
Yes, you can.
Do
exactly.
It now.
You can stream it, Joe.
And
boom.
And basically, it's the best of the year, right?
Yes. It's like I keep using the word annual, and then I realise that's an old person's word. But it
is.
Yeah.
That's the old bit.
It's a synopsis. It's a lovely, clean synopsis of the year's music.
Yeah.
It's a dossier.
Not an oral history of 2017.
Yeah. So there's like one mix, which is all like full on, and you know, you put it on, not full on, that sounds stressful, but it's like upbeat, and you put it on before you go out, and then one mix, which is a bit more
nice.
Chill.
And I only got this morning that Annie Mac Presents and AMP is actually quite a nice.
Yeah.
See what you did there.
Thank you, Joe.
Yeah.
Well, what I'm trying to do with Annie Mac Presents is slowly kind of take me out, my name, obviously out of the equation, which is why we abbreviate to AMP, so that it can kind of live on its own without me.
Those social media lessons aren't really working on it.
Yeah.
What was that thing you were saying? Instagram could be out there.
Yeah, I know.
You'll be drawing.
I'm kind of withdrawing. Just the name. Yeah. Just the name, so that it can do more things without me. But it will still be me, if you know what I mean. Does that make sense?
I think so, yeah. You might just have to put that under every...
Yeah.
When it's out there...
It's still me.
It's still me.
It's still sort of me, but not me. But it is me. But it's out now anyway.
Yeah.
Annie Mac Presents...
2017.
Yeah.
Boom.
Is it just me who didn't have an amazing proposal story to tell?
Well, here's my thing. I don't like enforced anything. I don't like enforced humour. Thus, I'm not a mad fan of like stand-up comedy, unless it's naturally hilarious. Like, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I don't mean like, right, you have to laugh now.
Yeah.
Similarly, I don't like enforced fun. See, a hen party.
Yeah.
Everyone has to have a good time. I also don't like enforced romance. It's my worst. Valentine's Day, blech.
Yeah, same.
Grand gestures of romance, blech. So I think there's ways that you can be romantic in a lovely way without it being something that, you know, it is a story to tell everyone else, if you know what I mean, which I feel like a lot of proposals are.
Well, it's funny you say that. And I think that the reason I've been thinking about this again of late is when Harry and Meghan announced their engagement. Obviously, we're all delighted, handsome, lovely young couple, and they do seem so sweet and in love and all that. But, you know, it's... And I know that they have to have a story about how they got engaged for the press. And it was so romantic and so perfect.
So remind me what the story was. They were in their house?
Basically, they...
She was roasting a chicken, I think, wasn't she?
But, you know, they told the whole story of how, you know, the ring has some stones in it from some of Diana's jewellery.
Yeah.
And it's also got a stone that has some significance to do with Botswana, where they went on their first date. Very hasty. I think they didn't even see each other.
Like
a couple of weeks, and then they went away together. Eyebrows raised. But you know, and it was just so sort of like perfect. Oh, we were just inside, and he got down on one knee. I didn't get any of that, and I'm fine with it, really.
Mm.
But sometimes when people ask you your proposal story, and mine is, well, we had a fight, and sort of went, all right, well, let's go and get married then.
Yeah.
Like, you know, and...
But see, that's my kind of proposal story, I think. I'm down with that. You've probably got the same money. Because I think you almost touched on it a bit there. I think, sadly, I think a lot of it now, people think out their proposals with a view to it being shared on social media.
Yeah.
Actually, is it good for the Instagram? Is it good for Facebook?
Yeah.
It is a bit cynical.
Is there a photo op?
Yeah. You know, like, can you imagine literally art directing your engagement photo for social media? It's a bit cynical, really, isn't it?
But that's because everybody feels like that's what's demanded and expected.
Well,
so
I don't know
where it begins.
Well, this is weddings as a whole as well.
Yeah.
And this is another reason why I so shied away from getting married for so long. The idea of it is because there's so many traditional things that you are kind of obliged and supposed to do. Like, you have to have a bridesmaid, and you have to do this, and you have to have speeches. And for me, I was like, well, what if I just don't want to do any of that?
Yeah.
What if I want to wear black? What if I want to, you know, there shouldn't be like these imposed rules, and no one's kind of enforcing them, but there's expectations from everywhere.
But that's what you'll find when you do get married, even if you're sort of like steadfast, you do find that suddenly you realise that so many people, and people you love and care about and respect, they actually see it's for them rather than for you. So you'll hear things like, oh, you know, Auntie Jean's going to be heartbroken if you wear a black dress.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You know, and it's, you're like, but I want to wear a black dress.
Yeah.
Oh, but then, you know, and it's whether or not you can ride out the...
Yeah.
The tears and tantrums yeah. of others.
The disapproval. But the quiet disapproval.
Yeah. I'm not angry, just disappointed,
Annie. Yeah, yeah. And the eyebrows. Yeah. Ooh, ooh.
But I think when it comes to weddings and proposals, I think the world does divide into two sets of people. There are people who literally buy into the whole pomp, ceremony, tradition of it all, and they have that, yeah. that checklist you talked about.
Which is also fine.
But then there's also, you shouldn't then be chastised if you don't want to do that.
Yeah.
But I mean, you know, I think I may have said this on podcasts in the past, but you know, I do know of a couple who broke up because the proposal was not deemed good enough.
What?
Yeah, like the ring, the situation, the way it was done was not good enough. And that was like their moment of, you are not the person for me. And they've been together for like 2 years. You know, so...
Well, that's probably a lucky escape for the proposer.
Yeah, you could also argue there may have been other things going on there.
Yeah, but... may well have been. But I guess, I don't know, I don't think I would... well, clearly I didn't break up with someone after being asked if, you know, if I can get married. But I don't know, I suppose if you think, but they're supposed to really know me and they're supposed to know that I would hate this.
But somebody would argue, Jo, that your proposal was actually very honest and actually very true to who you and your husband are.
Oh, yeah,
and
that's, I'm talking about your friend. Oh, yeah. Maybe she has a right to think, well, yeah, maybe. Actually, he should have known me more than to know.
Yeah, you're right. I've always said, if anybody got me a stripper, I would be like, I'd disown you. I'd never talk to you ever again. Because that's my that idea is so humiliating for me. Yeah. I just don't find it funny.
I'm exactly the same.
And I literally, and so you couldn't appreciate it. Somebody actually, one of your friends.
I'm storing that information for later use.
Yeah. But literally, that would be so mortifying. And don't get me wrong, if you appreciate that sort of Magic Mike thing, that's totally cool. And I can sort of stand back and watch other people enjoying it and kind of tolerate it, but I still find it quite anxious.
Mm.
But yeah, if you did that to me, that would almost be the end of our friendship. I could not, because you clearly do not know me, and you there's almost like a weird, like, you know how uncomfortable that would make me feel. How would you do that?
Yeah. So is it too personal? And say if it is, we can cut it out. But so did you and your betrothed, your attendant, did you have a proposal story, or did you just kind of...
We just, basically, we were sat in a car, in the car park of Hampstead Heath, with our two kids asleep in the back, listening to the radio. And he basically suggested in a very casual way that, you know, maybe we should get married. And he's from Yorkshire. He's the least romantic person of all time. Oh, and he will admit it.
He's neighbours with my, do you want to fucking get married?
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, yeah.
So he's like the opposite of a grand gesture type of guy. But I was like, yeah, I guess we should. And then I kind of realised the significance of what had just been said. And then I started to cry. And then it was like, oh my God. And then... and then we just kind of, yeah, we were just really happy and we were into it.
That's awesome.
So, but it was quite nice. In a way, that was kind of really my way of, I would not, like, you can't handle a stripper. I would not have been able to handle anything remotely romantic in that way. Like
a full flash mob dance.
Yeah, like, team. I remember a boyfriend I had when I was in school who, we all went to, like, the swimming baths, our class, and my boyfriend at the time, it was Valentine's Day, and he swam up to me with a rose in his mouth.
Amazing.
In the pool! And I was like, oh, this is so... Like, I literally died. I hated it.
I
gave it to my friend. I was like, hold that. Do not come near me. I can't handle this.
I've got to tell you, if I'd been at that swimming pool at, 14 years old, yeah. I died of jealousy. That is exactly the kind of thing I wanted to happen to me at that age.
Yeah. I was a tomboy. I was like not into it at all. I was like, ugh, a rose. Yeah. So I guess it's horses for courses, isn't it?
But he didn't know you, so he wasn't a keeper, you see? So that's kind of what we're saying.
Yeah.
Did he get beaten up afterwards?
Aww.
No, I don't think so. I hope not. I don't remember if he did.
But because that's quite a romantic, like a really grandiose romantic for a young
teenage
boy.
It is, isn't it, right?
Yeah. It wouldn't happen today.
No.
Yeah.
No, it wouldn't.
It's dick pics now.
Dick pics.
Yeah.
I'm so glad I'm not 14.
Oh, yes.
I just, I'm so terrified of having a teenage girl.
Yeah. Really. Well, how long have you got?
About 6 months.
6 months, yeah.
Yeah.
God.
Mm.
Well, she's lucky she's got you as a mum, because at least you're like clued up. You know the lingo.
You know what could be coming.
So I think you clued up, but then I think I just spilled the tea all wrong. So I don't know what the hell's going on her phone that I'm yet to be horrified by.
Hopefully no proposals just yet.
No, I don't think she'd be into that at all.
Exactly. You've got a few years before you worry about bad proposals.
But I think, you know, it isn't just me who's got a crap proposal, but I do kind of love and own my crap proposals.
Yes, yes, I do too.
Hey. Yeah. A proposal is a proposal. I haven't got one yet. So, you know what? A crap one, I'll take.
Also,
I bet your standards are high, though. That's the thing. You're scaring them off.
No. The whole idea of, in a heterosexual couple, a man asking a woman to marry him, I'm so not in either. My sister asked her husband to marry her, and I really like that. And I probably would have asked Tom in time if I'd really kind of decided, you know, it has to happen. Yeah. But yeah, I'm all for everyone asking everyone.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Annie, you said, is it just me that, is it a girl's girl?
Yeah. I mean, what is a girl's girl?
Well,
that's a question.
I'm a girl's girl.
Well, but I think this is a bit of a, I think, loaded one because, especially in the current climate, you know, you're not supposed to be, you know, people in the age of, like, people raising their kids gender neutral and people trying to shy away from the classic sort of gender sort of stereotypes. I guess this is a bit of a loaded gun, don't you think? But I mean, I'm with you. I think the truth is that's a recent phenomenon, but it's a recent development and it's a more enlightened way, I guess, of parenting and raising. But let's be honest, the majority of people our generation have all been raised by people who did feel the need to tick those gender stereotypes. Mm-hmm. So we are essentially a product of those. And I would argue we do have male and female traits. But but I think you know, I think it is interesting. I think there's no shame in saying you're a girly girl, but I do think there's something a bit weird. I think girls would often, you get very rarely have a girl say, "Oh, I'm not a girly girl." Mm. So I think it's almost to be, it's a way of being saying, "I'm not part of the system."
Okay. See, I thought what you were talking about was not being a girl's girl, being a girl who doesn't particularly get on well with other girls.
Yeah. Ah, I thought you meant different than that.
I think that too.
I thought you meant like dolls.
I think it's all wrapped into the same thing because I think it's fascinating because, you know, obviously I've worked with in predominantly female dominated areas in magazines for the last, you know, God knows, 20 years. So, you know, I even growing up, like, I actually made more male friends from the age of 18 onwards. Like, growing up, all my friends were girls. So, you know, I'm probably a very girly man if we're talking about that.
Yeah, yeah.
But I do think that that's an interesting point because I think that the funny thing what I see is when you see a girl who really isn't a girl's girl, she tries very hard to be a girl's girl, when in fact she's more naturally, I think, at ease with men. But trying to see a girl pretending and masquerading is often... I've worked with people who have been like that and you can just see through it. But I think it's because there is this real thing about... It's a real shame in saying, I'm not a girl that gets on with very many girls. But, you know, I've seen girls who just... They rub people up the wrong way and I don't know what it is. I don't know what it is about those people that does it. But, you know, is it something you're just born like?
I think a lot of this stuff starts, and I wonder if you'll probably agree with me, Annie. I think a lot of it starts in the high school playground. And the way that your friendships are developed and, I don't know, I suppose influenced in that playground environment. Now, I'm being very, very broad strokes here, but and I'm not going to name them, I can think of two A-list celebrities I've interviewed, really like world famous women, absolutely beautiful women who said, I'm not a girl's girl. I never had any girlfriends at school. I gravitated to the boys and that just made the girls hate me even more. I had one of these who, you know, is a pop star and has a lot of feminist songs, say there's no such thing as the sisterhood. And I think that, and I have a girlfriend myself who, she was very, very pretty and very, very popular with boys at school. And in that playground environment, all the girls hated her.
Yeah, same here.
And it completely coloured her view of women going into adulthood. And so when I do meet women who I think, you know, and they say things like, oh, I don't really have any female friendships. I don't really like all that squealing and, you know, running around squealing over an engagement ring. I just get on with men more. I think it's because of that damage that was done then. I've tried to warm to them, and I'm always sort of trying to prove to those women.
We can be okay.
Can get on. Yeah, yeah, absolutely. I agree. Yeah. That is a really good point.
What about you?
Well, I'm kind of weirdly totally in the middle. So when I was small, I don't remember having any kind of gender stereotypes put on me in a forced way. I was never into dolls. I was always into Sylvanian families, remember them? So it was more like animals than like dolls. And I had two big brothers and a big sister. My big sister was really into dolls and really into makeup and really into that side of things. But I was way more into just climbing trees and playing football. And I was always allowed to do whatever I wanted in that respect, which I'm really grateful actually to my mum and dad for. They just kind of let me be who I wanted to be. And that meant that when I was in school, I had some really close, like my best friends were girls, but then I used to hang around with boys all the time and like play football with them, or I don't know, before this is like kind of reached puberty. And then when I went to school, high school, I had, again, really close girlfriends, but then loads of boy friends too that I wasn't like really tight with, but I would like socialise with. Mm. And that happened all the way through. Like in college, I lived with five girls. Well, four girls and one guy, but then all the people I'd hang out with, like when I go clubbing with and all, would be guys. There would be a group of 10 guys and me, and we would all like swap records and play music together. And so I've always kind of had both, weirdly.
Yeah.
Really close friends that are girls and loads of friends that are boys too.
Well, that's the dream scenario, really, isn't it? I think there is, you know, for as much as I said, in my formative years, maybe there was more of a balance toward it being more female friends.
Yeah.
Certainly now, in my current situation, I've got as many male friends as I do have female. Mm. I think
it's healthy to have both, absolutely, if possible. Yeah. Really,
just being sat here, just thinking about the term girl's girl, in a weird way, oh, he's a man's man. That's such an old-fashioned expression. I certainly would never aspire to want to be a man's man.
Yeah.
So in a weird way, maybe these two expressions are actually quite dated.
Quite
in the
outdated.
Sense that
it
was when there was, people were trying to place these gender stereotypes. Yeah. They were trying to create a divide between the genders. And now that's not really cool. And none of us really want it. So in a weird way, maybe it's a good thing that we're gradually eradicating these kind of outdated expressions.
Yeah. I've never thought of myself as girly ever. As in that traditional idea of girliness, like frilly and, you know, I've never thought of that.
It's interesting, though, because I don't think I've ever thought of myself as either, you know, I hate the word tomboy, but, you know, as a tomboy or a girl's girl, kind of sort of somewhere in the middle. Mm. But then you have a child, and when your three-year-old says to you one day, oh, your mum, you're really girly. I mean, you wear makeup every day and you care what clothes you put on. So I kind of think maybe I'm more...
So do a lot of men, Joe.
Yeah, but that's what I mean. I was just thinking, but so do men. So.
But that was her very
sort of binary
little world. Mm. But it's, you know, it's funny to have somebody else observe you in that way.
And think of you like that.
Yeah.
I find the whole gender conditioning thing like so fascinating. Mm. And it's something I've thought of so much, because as a DJ, as a female DJ, I mean, there's loads more now. And I'm talking about not radio DJ, like club DJing. That when I started, there were so few women DJs, so few. And I was always the only one on the lineup of men, always. But I was always okay with that, because I've always had men, friends, boyfriends growing up. And so I never felt like an alien. I always felt comfortable in that world. But I did feel like, where the fuck are all the women kind of thing. But I always wonder, because people always go, well, why do you think it is that there's no female DJs? And it's like, well, why is there no female fucking, you know, really successful, you know, computer engineers? Or, you know, it's the same in all those kind of places of work. You know, there's a real lack of women, and I don't know why that is, but I've always wondered, and I've always wanted to like try and research it properly. And is there something different in a woman's brain as to why, when it comes to the technical side of things, like even in terms of making music, it's always the producers are always men, and the singers are always the women. And it's kind of like, why is this? Is this just because there's a pattern in place and women have never seen other women doing it, so they've never felt like that's something for them?
Yeah.
Or is it something deeper, where there's something in a woman's brain that is
Gaga said something
different than a man's brain?
I definitely think there's a lot of truth in you can't be what you can't see.
Yeah,
I mean, radio DJ is exactly, because I didn't even think of a career for myself as a radio DJ until I saw Marianne Harbs and heard Marianne Harbs. And I think female DJs is the same. There's a huge amount of young female DJs coming through now because they've seen more female DJs at the top.
Going back to that, you know, the subject of girls, girl, boys, boy, whatever, you know, growing up in that environment and developing your career in that DJ environment, did you feel consciously that you had to change your persona in any way? Did you feel, oh, I better be a bit more bantery, so-called blokey, or do you know what I mean? Did you ever feel like I have to mould my personality to fit into this male environment?
I don't think so. I mean, I'm always asked this, and I don't remember feeling like that, because I've always, I guess, been so comfortable in that anyway. Like when I was 18, 19, I bought my decks off a guy. I learned how to DJ from a guy. And so I feel really, I guess I've always felt, for me, it was more just like, why am I the only one?
Yeah.
Is there something weird about me that I'm the only woman doing this?
But did you must have also thought, this is awesome, I'm the only one.
It's also quite cool because it's like, okay, well, I'm going to just enjoy it while I, you know, enjoy being unique, I guess, in that way. But equally, now that there is more women, it's really great to see. And and there's some, I remember this really small thing, like doing a gig in Southampton with this girl called Shanti Celeste, who's a really good DJ from Bristol. And I remember I was on after her, and I remember just seeing her tie up her hair and like do a scrunchie and like tie up her hair. And I remember thinking, fuck, it's so nice to DJ after a woman, because I don't ever see people tying up their hair. And it was just such a small, like, feminine thing to do, I guess. But it really struck me. It's like, God, I never see women doing this behind the deck. So, yeah, it's been really nice to see more. Anyway.
Yes. We're hopefully inspiring lots of...
Again, another series of podcasts could be done on that subject alone.
Let's do it.
That's good. I think inspiring lots of other girls to do it. I think you're right. Yeah. It's all about you don't aspire to what you don't see. So I think that's why, you know, when people say, oh, why do you make such a big deal out of you making somebody... But it's important sometimes to acknowledge you are breaking through a glass ceiling, or you are, you know...
And I'm finding it, I'm thinking about it more and more now with two kids, because it's harder and harder for me to travel, and DJing, so much of DJing is traveling, especially international. Since I've had my first kid, I've stopped doing Australia tours, America tours, and so I've lost a big kind of section, I guess, of my DJ profile. And that is sad to me. I'm kind of a little bit angry about it, but also I'm aware that I made that choice because I don't want to do that, because I don't want to, A, bring my kid on tour, as I don't think he'd hate it, and be away for kind of 3 weeks at a time, whatever. But I'm also aware that I want to... I'm aware of the fact that there's not many other DJs who are moms with several children who I know, and I want to be able to do it to show that I can do it.
Yeah.
But equally, I'm like, God, it's getting fucking harder. So it's kind of like... It's getting, I don't know, I feel a bit conflicted about that at the moment. I want to be able to say when I'm 45, yes, I'm still an international DJ, but it's really fucking hard.
Yeah.
Especially when you have a full-time radio job as well.
But judging by all the plates you're spinning, you're doing quite a good job so far, I think.
I'm holding it down. Yeah. But when you have introduced one more thing to the mix, it's hard. Everything kind of falls off. So you have to be really careful about what new stuff you do.
I'm quite free at the moment. So if you have any childcare...
Great job.
Yeah, I mean, I live absolutely nowhere near you, but...
we can hold some plates.
Just put him in an Uber. It's fine.
Annie Mac, James Williams. Is it just me who isn't scared of getting older? Well, how do we feel about this? I know some people are. And I understand it. I appreciate why, you know, I definitely have my ups and downs on it.
Yeah.
But I'm actually finding that I'm kind of excited about some parts of it.
Mm-hmm. Which parts?
Well, the, you know, giving less fucks about what people think. And I don't know, I just feel like I know myself more. I know what I will and won't stand for, whether that's in... working life, in people I'm going to hang around with, I'm less afraid to just have my opinion. I'm less afraid of losing people for having an opinion, because I know that the people in my life who I really value are strong enough to handle us having different opinions and different values. And I think
a lot of it's down to the, I hate to, the cliche, but it's the power of saying no. Because you spend a lot of your
thing.
Your 20s, you feel you've got to say yes to everything, and you never turned down an opportunity. Your 30s, you still kind of have that hangover. And I do think, you know, when you turn 40, you're a bit like, do you know what? I don't want to do that. I'm not going to do it. Whereas
And you will say, actually, I can't do that because
I don't want to. And you don't really feel any, and you don't feel rude.
And it's okay to not want to.
And it's almost like you could go, yeah, because I'm too old now. And it's like, we'll go, oh, okay, yeah. But it's funny because, you know, obviously I'm 41, but it's really funny. I've still
You don't look 41.
Oh, bless you. Thank you. But
you could be 10 years younger.
Well, I've got...
I've
got some friends there now who are approaching 40. And it's really funny. Like, when I see them talking about it, I do see this look. And this is men I'm talking about. This look in their eye. And it's a look of genuine, like, I can see them really struggling just for the... When you sort of say, like when we asked you a few minutes ago, oh, what are you planning for your 40th? You did not look fazed in the slightest, Annie. So I think you'll handle it just fine. Mm. But these are people, men, and I see them literally, there's a look of panic in their eyes. And I sometimes go, did I ever have that? And I don't think I did, because I think I've always been proud of my age. I've never... I think, what's the point in lying? You're always going to get found out. So I've always tried to own it. But it is fascinating. I think it is. It's a milestone. Like any milestone, I think you either embrace it or you do find it quite scary. Mm. I mean, have you?
It's weird for me because you mentioned Peter Pan there, Joe. Like, working at Radio 1, which is like a youth brand and a youth station, you are very aware of your age because you're aware that you're talking to people that are essentially younger than you. Well, I mean, a lot of people who listen to Radio 1 are the same age as me, but...
Do you find you throwing in words like, oh, this track's so extra.
This track is sick.
Yeah.
I mean, I feel like it weirdly because I go out with someone who's 7 years younger than me as well, you end up talking in a way that is probably different than, you know, a 39-year-old who worked in, you know, HR for, I don't know, like another...
A bank.
Yeah, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So... I probably do speak in younger lingo, I guess. But equally, I just the idea of lying about your age is so exhausting to me that I've never, like, I know a lot of people who might have, like, a stage age, and that's like, ugh, I can't, the idea of lying about it is exhausting. Mm. So I agree with everything you said. There's so many elements of growing older that I love. And I really noticed when I turned 30, a lot of the things that you said happening to me. You shed a few friends that you have kind of been clinging on to because you felt obliged.
Yeah.
Or, you know, and then you realise, actually, they're not good for me. And they're not, they don't make me feel good about who I am. And other things like... Recently, I've just come off Facebook because, again, I feel like every time I go on it, it's not good for me. I don't like what I'm getting out of it.
Mm.
And I feel really good about that. So there's things that you do where you feel more confident in your decisions because you know who you are and you know what you need to be happy and to be content. But for me, it's more the fear of growing older is just the less time I'm alive.
Oh yeah, of course. Yeah.
And that's a really fundamental thing, but I guess also because I've had kids just this year, I feel like, fuck, you know, I'm really conscious of age. So I'm like, okay, I'm 39, I have my kid, so, you know, when I'm 69, he will be 20. So when I'm 79, he'll be 30. And then you're just like, fuck, you know. So it's that whole, for the first time in my life, approaching 40, being conscious of being middle-aged and being kind of halfway through life what that means.
But it doesn't mean that anymore. Because I was going to say, I think...
Well, hopefully they'll invent technology so I can be alive when I'm 120.
But in all seriousness, if, you know, let's be honest, we are probably a lot more active. We have much better diets, you know, hopefully the majority of us anyway. You know, and that's the thing about me is that, you know, I don't really necessarily work out and eat well because of vanity. There is, of course, an element of that. But it is something about, like, you know, you want to stay fit and active. And having seen relatives of mine who haven't done that, you know, you think, God, and you've talked about this, Joe, there's a reason why, you know, you want to stay physically fit because you want to be able to keep doing things.
Yeah.
And it's those things that worry me about getting older. The idea that, you know, I don't know, running out of breath going upstairs or, you know, literally, I only ever get weird about age when I get like a little niggle in my knee or my back and I start thinking, God, imagine if this turns into something really more scary, you know?
Mate, get used to that.
I know.
You're just at the beginning of the four journey.
Yeah, but I think going back to the point I was going to make is, you know, I think the idea now that 40 is middle age actually isn't true anymore. Like, you know,
so what is middle age? You say?
Well,
50?
I think 50 might be.
That would be good.
I
mean, I'd be fine with that.
You know, I mean,
you know, I'm going to be really bleak right now.
Oh, God.
You don't know, do you?
No,
for
true.
Some, for some people it's 20.
Yeah, you're right.
You know, yeah, that's
and,
true.
And this is what I remember, it was such a throwaway comment a friend of mine said to me a few years ago. I think it was something like my 34th birthday or something, and I was just going, oh God, I'm so old, what is there to celebrate, blah blah blah. And my friend said, you're celebrating, you made it another year.
Yeah.
And I thought, I'd never thought of my birthday that way before. And as you sadly, as you do get older and you do lose people, some people who have gone way too young, and you just have to start thinking about it that way. You have
to think,
you don't think, oh my God, I hope I can still go to the gym in 10 years. You just think, I'm just going to do this today and look what my body can do.
That's totally true.
I think that's really shifted me. It's such a tiny, basic, obvious thing.
I think the other problem is as well, I think, again, just the way you've been raised, but you know, you've been raised to things like landmarks, landmark birthdays. So I think that's the thing. I often, an average birthday year, you don't feel that way. But when it comes to a 30th, a 40th, I think what inevitably happens is you do go to that checklist, that unconscious checklist in your head. You go on, oh, I haven't done this, but I thought I would have done this by this age, or I would have achieved that
by
this age.
I'm terrible for that.
And that and awful, that's a... that awful website that where you can look up what David Bowie was doing at your age.
To feel like an underachiever.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And I think that's, we need to ditch that ideology, because that's not good. And that inevitably is what I think you end up doing when it comes to those milestone birthdays.
I think the biggest achievement you can reach, and that's something that often takes this long, is to like who you are. You know, to reach that point, because you spend your whole 20s kind of like
beating yourself up,
self-loathing and getting wasted and just like figuring out. And then 30, you're kind of, okay, maybe I've got the job I love, and you know, it just takes a while to actually be okay. I'm happy with my lot.
I'll be honest. I think cutting down on the drinking has really helped me.
Because
it stops me waking up and having waves the next day. Why did you say that to that person?
That's what I was talking about kind of knowing what you need to be happy. And a lot of that is actually not being putting yourself in these extreme highs and lows that you do when you get wasted. And like, honestly, like, I spent so much of my time in my 20s just having the best time, you know, like every weekend going out. But I feel like I've never been healthier in mind and body now, because I don't do that anymore. And it's really nice to feel strong mentally and physically.
That is true. Because you're probably, in many ways, your lifestyle in your 20s and early 30s can be way worse.
Oh, my God, believe
it. I wrote an editor's letter in Glamour a while ago about I was like having sausage sandwiches for breakfast every day.
Yeah.
No lunch, a bit of cheese on some lettuce, thinking I was healthy for dinner. Tons of beer, tons
of wine.
No exercise, working all the hours God sent, and then wondering why I always felt terrible.
Yeah.
It's hilarious that I didn't put those two things together until, I was like about 35.
And it's not so bad. I mean, I always forget, you know, somebody did say to me, oh, how do you feel about turning 40? Because that's what you always get when you're turning them up. Yeah. How do you feel? It's almost like it's that pressure to sort of, you know, have a stock answer to give people. And I just found I said, but the thing is, it's weird, because nobody ever said to me last year, how do you feel about turning 39?
I know, 39's a weird one.
But you're basically a day older. You're a day older. I don't feel any different. But it's like people expect you to have this like epiphany of, you know.
When you're 49, I hope I'm around to ask you how you feel about turning on the 49.
On the precipice of the new middle age.
I'll be very deaf by then, so I won't hear the answer.
And I've now got that look in my eye. I was telling those men off for having about turning 40. I've suddenly got that haunted look in my eyes.
Ultimately, we think, listen, you know, I mean, we're all going to die.
Exactly.
It's inevitable.
So don't fear it.
Yeah.
Just live it.
Yeah, exactly.
I should be having a guru podcast.
Self-help books, Joe.
Yeah.
No, it's true, exactly. You know, you have a bit more fun. Right? Don't waste that time worrying. Just spend that time enjoying yourself.
Go out and do something nice today for yourself, everybody. Yeah. Do that.
What are you all going to do? What should we do today that's nice?
Well, I'm going to the gym. Well, it's not, but it's the showers are good.
Have a nice long shower.
So when I go to my next meeting, motivation. My hair's going to look... It often is. It's like, oh, well, at least I get to do my hair again.
Yeah. Well, I've been bothering to put makeup on.
Yeah.
I don't think I could be bothered if I was a girl to put makeup on.
It's so long.
Going to Annie Bloody Mac's house. I had to make an impression.
I put on some extra foundation and primer for you guys.
Aww.
Yeah.
She's glowing.
Obviously, if any of our lovely listeners wanted to send their thoughts or opinions on these things you want us to talk about on a future episode, do email us. We've got our new email address, haven't we?
Yeah, you set it up, so I don't know it.
Is it just mepodcast@gmail.com?
That trips off the tongue, doesn't it?
Doesn't it just? But I'm afraid is it just me@gmail? Was taken? How dare they? Who took it?
Is it just me podcast@gmail.com?
Yeah.
You can also, hashtag us.
Yes.
Social media, Joe_Elvin on Instagram or Twitter.
You can track us down.
And next time you are buried under a pile of Mars bars, I'd like to see an Instagram of it, please.
Do you want the clothed or naked?
Both. Yeah, yeah. Put it all out. Imagine the amount of likes you'll get for the naked. Come
actually,
on.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah.
We've got to do it.
Yeah. Mind you, you haven't seen me naked. It definitely needs the Mars bar coverage, at least. Thank you so much, Annie Mac.
My pleasure.
You have been an absolute dream.
Dream you, tea maker as well.
As you always are. Yeah.
Anytime. Anytime you want tea or chat, please come round.
Do check out the album.
Yes, okay, oh, check out the album. Yes.
Annie Mac presents 2017.
Thank you, Joe. Thank you.
Go get it. Thanks, Annie.
Thank you.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.